Hi, and welcome to the Operation Move podcast. I'm Katie from Katie Michelle Coaching.
And I'm Zoe from Operation Move.
And welcome. We're so excited to have you listening to us at our fourth podcast. We've made it to four.
I don't think we've ever done anything so consistently on the same time every week.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Ever.
I'm so proud of us already. So how was your weekend? How was your Mother's Day, Zoe?
Was pretty. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Mother's Day. You know, like I like it for, you know, like doing stuff for my mum, and you know, my kids really like the Mother's Day stall and all of that sort of stuff. So To be honest, I kind of do it more for them than for me. Like, I reject this idea that you kind of have this one day where you are not supposed to do anything, which is somehow supposed to make up for not in my household, but in other people's household where the woman is doing absolutely every single piece of unpaid labour, and then but it's okay because she gets Mother's Day. Whereas, you know, I think that most of us sort of aim for a more equal division and, you know, just supporting one another. So it's not such a big deal to have like a day off. And I certainly had some interesting conversations with people on Twitter about it, because you had a lot of this sort of dark humour about, you know, mothers just wanting to be left alone. And I get it, you know, because it's so... motherhood can be so relentless and overwhelming, and so that kind of reaction of just wanting a bit of space I think is really, really normal. But I also get how it's also kind of weird, like it's a day to celebrate being a mother and your first reaction is to go somewhere away from your children.
I think that day off thing is so interesting, and I say this from the perspective of a divorced person who has time away from their children every other weekend. And I've thought this for the longest time now, that if most couples had, or even just most parents individually, had that time, even not every other weekend, but regularly every month, I think so many more relationships would survive. It is life-changing having that space. Just amazing. But the idea of, you know, putting all of that into one day a year and then kind of promoting it and marketing it and telling people if you buy slippers for your mum, then that counts as time off.
Yeah, like the Nutella. I went into like one of the department stores, and the whole Mother's Day display is like slippers, pajamas, and giant jars of Nutella. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I like Nutella pizza as much as the next person, but is that really, like, what does that say about our idea of motherhood, that it's people in sleepwear gorging themselves on chocolate? Like, how
accurate
removed from joy is that situation?
That's funny. It's in my Mother's Day. My my boyfriend is away at the moment, and he's been away since Saturday. So my kids at 7 o'clock, I hear this, you know, the door opening a little bit, and I've been awake for a while, and he's, oh, she's awake. And all four of them leap in and jump all over the bed and give me their carefully chosen presents. And it was lovely, of course, and, you know, all cuddles and stuff. And then approximately 7 minutes later, they all bolt out yelling, come on, we want breakfast, we're hungry. And it was, you know what, I mean, for me, it's a chance to go, I'm so privileged to be a mother, and I know that. I love my children. I love being a mum. I love that I can honestly say I love my space from the kids as well, and that has improved my parenting an awful lot.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think it's also, even when we moved up here, and for people who don't know, I moved from the Central Coast up to the Northern Rivers, and part of that was, at the time, my husband was commuting from the Central Coast to Sydney, so he was in the car anywhere in between sort of 3 to 4 hours a day, and that was really quite, it was really hard for him. That's like a part-time job in the car. And he would go for probably sometimes, because the kids were so young, he would go for 3 or 4 days without even seeing them, really. Mm-hmm. And for me, basically, he was leaving before 5 in the morning and getting home at around 8 o'clock at night. And so it's I hate people who say that it's like being a single parent because it's nothing like being a single parent.
Yeah, but I was about to say that.
Parenting on my own for long stretches of time, and it is very different because I still have a husband to bring me food and and to talk to and vent to and all of that sort of stuff, so it's very, very different, and I'm very sensitive to that, having been raised by a single mother myself. But I would say,
but also valid to say that that's hard.
My need for space back then was a lot higher than what it is now because I didn't get that much space. So at that time, my husband on the weekend would sort of take the kids for 3 or 4 hours at a time to give me a bit of breathing room. But then we kind of ended up being a bit like ships passing in the night because he was always at work or taking care of the kids to give me a break when he was at home. So when we moved here, he works down the road and basically he leaves at 8 and he's back at 5:30. He gets more time with the kids and I have a lot less of a need to spend time without them because my life as a general rule is a lot less pressure. Plus, they're at school now, so I get that time during the day, although it still sometimes happens, like last night. It got to about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and since I picked them up from school a bit before 3, because I picked them up a bit early on Tuesday, and they've just been non-stop talking since I picked them up. At a certain point, I said, "You can continue talking, but I'm having a break from talking now. I'm just having quiet time and you just do what you need to do, but I'm having quiet time for a bit." And they're kind of used to that as having a mum who's an introvert, and so they keep doing what they're doing. And they know they can talk to me. It's not like I won't respond, but they know that I'm just recharging for a little bit.
Oh, bless the chatterbox selves. I've had a big reminder this week. When I in my life prior to my current life, I did do a lot of the parenting, and my ex-husband would go away for days at a time, and we had quite, I guess, let's say, traditional gender roles in the household, which, over a decade of having babies and breastfeeding became increasingly challenging emotionally and mentally for me. And the life I live now is very different. Like, my partner is very hands-on. We share the cooking, the cleaning, like everything's split down the middle. I value the work he does outside of home. He values what I do at home, outside of home, so to speak. And so his being away the last few days, I feel like by last night, I think he gets back tonight, and by last night I was just like, I am exhausted. Did I used to do this all the time by myself? And I did, and I got used to it. But, fist bump, single mums, you are awesome. Because it's bloody hard work, and even, just having my boyfriend around makes such a massive difference. Even just having that person to talk to, at the end of the day, if something's happened or something, one of the kids is driving me up the wall, as happens now and again, just having that someone to bounce things off and to calm you down and to say, do you know what, it's okay, you're doing a good job. And I think that's the thing single parents maybe don't hear enough of from the world at large, because they are doing a freaking good job.
And especially, we're talking about comparison today, and I can see that a lot too with some of the people I talk to in either, the community groups or the training groups we do or whatever, is that you often have people who work full-time, are single parents, and are also trying to manage a training schedule, and they can easily fall into a trap of, say, comparing themselves to someone like me, who I'm not a single parent. I work at home, which makes it a lot more flexible, and both of my kids are in school during the week, and then they feel like they should be getting more done with their training. But the two situations are completely different. Yeah. And if I was a single parent, there's no way, and particularly if I was working outside the home, there's no way I would be able to do half of what I do. I mean, the vast majority of my running time is in the morning before school drop-off, which I can do because my husband is at home with the kids.
Yeah. For me, in the time before I met my partner and was doing it completely on my own, I relied very heavily on things like school holiday programs and after school care and childcare to get stuff done. And I have zero guilt around doing that because it was imperative for my mental health that I'd be able to continue training as I worked through all the stuff around, you know, the ending of a marriage and all that really hard stuff. But, you know, even comparing that to where I am now, where I do have someone else floating around, it's not the same scenario at all. And it is so much easier now. All my children are at school. I do have another adult to bounce off. And in a million years, I don't think we would ever have expectations of everyone in our community to have the same access to time as we do at the moment.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that I'm endlessly impressed by what people manage to do. I have at the moment, like Nikki's in training for a half, and she works full time. She has her kids, and she's at uni. And I just look at her and go, I have no idea how she does that.
Oh, people are amazing. And I think there's a line between knowing what's possible and wanting to do things. And I think that's, you know, it's a real balancing thing, because it's one thing to encourage people and say, if you really want something enough, you will find a way to make it happen. But you have to find a way to make it happen within your own reality. And your reality might be you work full time, might be you're a single parent, might be you need a greater support network than you currently have before you can do this thing that you want to do.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that there is a difference between, you know, you can have your goal that you want to work towards, and there's a myriad of creative ways that you can do that if you're time poor. But you want the time that you're setting aside to be realistic, because otherwise you are just going to feel like you're continually failing and you're continually falling short, where you should be feeling like you're continually kicking ass. That's how it should feel if you pick something that is realistic. Like, it's okay to stretch yourself, and I'm all about that, but it has to be realistic. And more with myself, I'm saying, okay, technically, on an absolutely perfect week of running my life like an extremely well-oiled machine, I maybe could do all of that. But life is not a well-oiled machine. And so I need all of this buffer time around everything, for the kid to have a tantrum about shoes and socks, or for somebody to be sending an email that's a bit urgent that I need to reply to, or like this week for me to be kind of working around the fact that I have a broken oven, you know, or whatever it is. And so if you just take it back to something that's a bit more realistic, then you're actually going to get a lot more enjoyment out of it rather than going for something that is a bit out of your reach. And there are so many ways to, you know, even if you want to train for something big like a marathon or a half marathon or something like that, there are definitely ways to do that when you are pretty short on time. So it's not a barrier in and of itself, but it might mean that you're not training 5 days a week. It might be 3 days a week with two really short sessions and a longer session or something like that. And I think that it's really important how you see it in your day-to-day, more so than whether it is what the way other people see you. You know, you need to look at what you're doing and feel really pleased and feel like you're succeeding and feel really positively about what you're doing, rather than feeling like you are kind of missing some invisible mark.
And there's a really big difference between reasons and excuses. And the thing is, what is a excuse to someone else is a reason. So you can't look at, you know, the way someone else is motivated and someone else saying, oh, this is my excuse for not doing it, and think, oh, it's just an excuse. Because for you it may not be. It might be a reason. And that comes back to that sense of comparison and why it's never, ever a positive thing, particularly when we're talking about training.
No. I mean, I think that probably the biggest thing that trips people up is slow versus fast in comparison. And I think that it's really natural thing to get into, because one of the things about most kind of training is how responsive it is. So if you put in a certain amount of effort, you will get a certain amount of improvement. And so I think that it's easy for people to mistake being good at running with being fast. Because yep. they're two very, very, very different things. And some people just start with more. You know, like you might have some people just have a
genetic predisposition.
Genetic predisposition. You know, like I have friends who ran track and cross country and stuff when they were in high school. And I have no doubt that if they were still running, they would start at a much higher level than where I did, where I was always really bad at it. And I think that so you have that to contend with. You also have the fact that in any kind of group, there people respond to training in different ways. So you have high responders who, you know, you put them in your, you know, like 4-8-12-week program and they are going to have a huge improvement in fitness. And you have the kind of average responders who will respond a bit. And then you have people who basically, like, their health will improve, but things like speed are not really going to improve. And that might be demotivating for some people, but I think it can also be liberating in a way that you know that it is the kind of thing where your health is going to be improving, your mindset is going to be improving, you are going to be feeling great, and it has very little to do with how fast you are, and you don't have to get tied into this thing of this certain speed is good and this certain speed is not good. And I think that it's something more of a daily practice, because I can get really easily sucked into it too, particularly when you have hard data like how fast you ran something. I get things in my time hop all the time at the moment about me running, you know, sort of whatever, you know, like 5 something or other kilometres and it seems so far removed from where I am now. And some of it you can attribute to different things, like I had a lot more time for training then. I had just come off a period of really good base building, whereas now I'm doing the base building. And there are a lot of things that you can point to as to why that might be the case. But
and do you know what? I think a lot of women, maybe even the majority of women, come to many things in life with an intrinsic sense of lack or not enough. Maybe it's because of, you know, the world we've lived in and grown up in and the way we've been marketed to all our lives. But I think, you know, we look at so many things with this sense of lack, like I'm not as whatever as she is, and it's something that you have to work really consciously to overcome, because when you believe that about yourself at a really deep level, of course you're going to come to this kind of thing and go, oh well, look at her running so fast. And we all do it. Even like I know for me, I'm very aware of how I respond to this kind of thing, and it takes work. Like I work on it every day, and it's worth it because I'm a happier person for it. But then I see my ex next door neighbor, who, you know, is this beautiful woman, and she did the run for the kids recently, and she's only just started running, and she did it in like 4 minute 30 kilometres, which I've never done in my life. I don't even think I'm necessarily physically capable of doing it. It's not a goal for me even. But I looked at that and I just went, oh my God, why do I bother? You know, you have that moment of I am not enough, and you really have to step outside yourself and go, actually, you are more than enough, because you're not her. You're a different person.
Yeah,
that's
and
okay.
I mean, and I follow all of these people who are probably, you know, either elites or semi-elites on Strava who run really, really fast. And I actually really like it because it reminds me how much it doesn't matter. You know, like for me, if I'm running, you know, like 6 minute kilometers or 5 minute kilometers, I'm still not running 3 minute kilometers. So I might as well calm down. and I think it helps to remind me that it is the effort that is the important part. Just because I'm running so much slower than those people, it doesn't mean they don't comment on my run saying, you know, oh, you know, great run or whatever. Because basically people's enjoyment of their running, whether it is fast or slow, is exactly the same. People get as much joy out of their PB of, you know, running 5Ks in 40 minutes as they do of their PBs of running 5Ks in 20 minutes. There's no difference in that joy of being able to put in a certain effort and do something that you haven't done before. And I think that you can get really locked into ideas of how fast you should be running or what you should be doing, which take you away from what the whole point is in the first place, which is has absolutely nothing to do with speed. And if you talk to the vast majority of people, they wouldn't even know how far a marathon or a half marathon is, or what is a reasonable amount of what sort of like an average amount of time is. And if you look at statistics, the average time for half marathons has been getting steadily been getting slower and slower and slower as years progress, which I think is a fantastic thing, because I think it means so many more people are doing it now.
Yep, absolutely. And it's interesting you talk about joy, because I guess the thing with comparison, the very, very most basic element of it, is if you can find joy in yourself and in what you're doing, and then genuinely find joy in what other people are doing without it being a point of comparison, you're just going to be so much happier in your life in general. If you stop trying to keep up with the Joneses, whatever it is the Joneses have got, you know, you're just going to experience joy and experience life at a completely different level. And it's interesting, because one of the NLP processes I do with people, it really forces you to kind of take yourself back to a point in your life where you had joy in a particular experience or feeling. And for most of us, you have to go back a long way to like being younger than 10 years old maybe, because before then, like, it's after that that we start becoming aware of the world and how we're being pushed in certain directions and pulled. But if you look at, like, I look at my kids and they have joy in everything. They don't need stuff. They don't need, you know, to look a certain way. They have joy just in being alive.
No, and I gave Piper salami yesterday and she told me I was the best mother in the world.
Oh, it's awesome. I went to the movies with my big kids a little while back, and it was at a cinema we don't usually go to, and it had standard reclining seats. And my son said, "This is the best day of my life." And if you can capture that feeling again and bring it back, then you can look at other people and have joy for them and joy for yourself. And how much nicer would the world be in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a shame, because I do see people who, you know, won't necessarily put certain times out in public, like there's a certain level of shame if they're not fast enough. And I think that's a real shame, because for me, all of the fun part is in the running, not in, you know, what time I have, which is why I've always, you know, fast, slow, you know, somewhere in the middle or whatever it is, I've always put it sort of, you know, like put it on Instagram or whatever, because I think it's good for people to see, like, yep, sometimes I like to run a bit fast and push it a little bit. But a lot of it is just a lot more relaxed running, because that's what I enjoy doing. And I remember ages ago I saw this, one of those things, those sort of images that get shared on Facebook in running groups, and it was this thing that if you, it's sort of like a matrix type thing, like blue pill and red pill. And if you take the blue pill, you'd get a really fast marathon time, and that time would get quicker every year for 5 years, but then you would never be able to run again. And the red pill was you would never, ever get any faster, but you would never be injured and you could run for the rest of your life. And no one would take the fast marathon pill.
No.
No one would, that, because everyone just wants to run.
Yeah. Gosh, that's interesting. I think that's awesome. I like as you were saying it, I was just thinking, in a million years, I would never give up the joy of knowing I can run forever. And
no, because no, and I think that it's easy to forget that. And I've certainly, you know, had goals in the past with, say, Melbourne, where I was aiming to run under 4 hours, and it's a really arbitrary goal, like has nothing to do with actual actual fitness level or training, like any time-based goal like that. It's really, it's a line in the sand and it's great for pushing yourself that little bit further, but it really is completely meaningless. And so on the, when I actually did it and it was 8 minutes faster than that or whatever, it didn't bother me because it's like, well, that goal pushed me to that point. That was the point I could get to and I was really happy with that point. But it also is a lot of pressure. And so this year I've been very conscious about the fact I'm not racing. Yep. Because I've got a lot of, you know, I often say a thing of choosing your hard. And when you've got lots of sort of business stuff going on and, you know, Piper's starting school this year and doing all of that and adding an aggressive racing goal to that is just way too much pressure, and running for me just needs to be something that I am enjoying, and it doesn't it gives way, way more than what it takes out. And so I'm just really enjoying that and not worrying about it and not having it be a thing where I go, oh, you know, I have to run this sprint at this time. You know, there's a place for that, and but it's not always going to be a part of your training when you've got a lot of other life things going on.
And when it comes to comparison, I think one of the cruelest comparisons we make is with ourselves. Like, we look at where we were a couple of years ago, and instead of thinking, you know what, an awful lot has changed in the interim and I am now this version of myself, we go, oh, why can't I still do that? And it's even so much of it is in the way we speak to ourselves. And I've been really conscious of it the last little while because I am doing low heart rate training and I'm not where I was a couple of years ago. And it is really easy to look back and, you know, same, I have my time hop come up and I look at it and I go, oh, remember when I did that run and whatever. And the difference for me, I think, is because I have things going on in other parts of my life, I know that I need to be kind to myself when it comes to running. And even the way I speak to myself while I'm running has changed. Like, I remember when I was training for my first marathon, I'd get out there and, you know, you kind of have a mantra in your head sometimes, and as I'd be plodding along listening to music, I would be chanting to myself, just effing do it, just effing do it, over and over and over again. And that was what drove me because I had that quite aggressive goal that I wanted to achieve. Whereas now, because I need to be kind to myself, I'm out there and as I'm running, I'm saying to myself, this is easy and effortless. This is easy and effortless. And do you know what? Because I'm saying that, it is. And I finish my runs feeling quite happy and joyful and like my soul's been filled up a lot more than when I was pushing myself. And because I'm doing that when it comes to running, I can then push myself in the areas of my life where I need to push myself right now.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, just listening to that, which sort of echoes some of my feelings when I look at my time hop, is it's not just like part of the problem is I'm going back to a really specific point in time and comparing to that, but I'm not going back far enough. So, you know, like this morning I went for a 16-kilometre run on, you know, on my sort of hill loop, which is my favourite because it sort of goes around the back road so I can pretty much do it without any cars, you know, lots of trees. It's very pretty and I really enjoy doing that first thing in the morning. And now if I compared that to a year ago, then, you know, probably is a lot slower. But if I go back to when I first started running 16 Ks on flat, I was dead after I finished that. I would do it on a weekend and I would come home and I'd be lying down for the rest of the day because that's how much it took out of me. And it was, you know, it was probably a fair amount slower than what I'm doing now and took a lot more effort. Whereas now I do that in the morning. That energizes me. That does not take anything out of my energy levels to go and run for 2 hours. I could, you know, could then and have done turn around and then go down and do a CrossFit workout if I had the time or whatever. And I think that that's also where you kind of slip up a bit with comparison is you take one really specific moment where you were at a peak fitness level as opposed to going back and actually looking at the full picture of how far you've come.
And you know what? You're saying that has just made me think, when I look at my time hop and it comes up with runs from 2 years ago where I was running really fast, and then I take a moment and step back from that and think about that in the context of my life then, and, you know, this time 2 years ago I was going through probably one of the most traumatic and challenging events of my entire life. I was running fast because I was running away, and that was the only thing in my life that was working for me. So comparatively, you know, I'll take my 6K run that I did Monday that took, you know, 2 minutes a kilometre longer, and I come home to my happy life. I'd much prefer this version than that version, I think.
Yeah, and I think that it is often not really even sort of representative of fitness level, you know. Like, so yes, I was probably running a lot faster a year or two ago, but actually my resting heart rate now is a lot lower than what it was. And I think that, you know, you just go through periods in your life when it's more important for you to push yourself, and so you do, and you get some amazing results doing it. But it's not necessarily everything, you know. Like, if I think and look at some of my faster races, they're not my favorite ones, you know, because I was very busy dying, you know. Like, and there is a lot of achievement and pride that I have in those races because I was able to push my body to a place that I never thought it could go. And, you know, it's not that I don't look back on that, and I'm not really proud of that, because I am. But in terms of racing as an experience, it was pretty hard. And a lot of times it's a lot of fun to go to, like, I'm going up to the Warwick Pentath. I was informed last night that it's in 11 days, which seems a bit soon.
Yeah, that is soon.
So it's 5 races over 2 days, and the total adds up to 42 kilometres. So the longest race within that is a half marathon. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to going to that and not racing and not having it be a pressure thing. I'm going to see a couple of Upmove people up there, which is going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be, I think, a dinner on the Friday night where I'm informed that they will have a vegetarian pasta option, which is very exciting.
Very nice.
And all of my most favourite event runs that I have done have not been when I've been racing. They've been relaxed ones where I've usually been chatting to you for most of the time.
Mine too. Funny that.
And I think that is, on the one hand, if you are pushing for a time, you are never going to be able to replicate the adrenaline of an event to get you there. So I have no doubt in my mind that if I had just decided to run really fast on my own, I would not have been capable of doing, you know, like a sub 150 half marathon. Like, that would not be possible. But there's a lot to be said for saying, okay, I might like to push on this particular event, but I'm going to do all of these events, and it's just about going to be about hanging out with my people and having a good time and enjoying the fact that I am actually able to run 20 kilometers and consider that to be easy. I mean, I think it's so easy after a while to not realize how amazing that is, that you can run 5 or 10 or 20 kilometers and in your mind,
remember
that
our first half marathon?
Oh, God, it's so hard.
Oh, my gosh, the photos of us crossing the line, we literally look like we're going to die.
And I think it is one of those things too with that. Like, that was so much faster than anything we'd ever done in training. It was just, you just get swept up in the moment. And we get into accidental racing when we are kind of doing something racy together, because I keep thinking that I have to keep up with you. You keep thinking you have to keep up with me, and we end up running really fast if we're not talking the whole way. If we're talking the whole way, that usually takes care of that.
Yeah, the talking ones are more fun for sure.
Way more fun. And
I was just going to say though, the whole short version of comparison though, and it's really easy for us to say and much harder to do, is just don't do it. Like, just catch yourself in the moment and stop and tell yourself something nice instead. Tell yourself something positive about you right now.
And I think really you can also get caught in thinking these are the things that I should care about, but really challenge that idea. Like, do you really care about that? Does it really make that much of a difference to you if your 5-kilometer run is 38 minutes or 31 minutes or 29? In the grand scheme of things, do you really care? Isn't more what you care about that you get to be outside, you get to see beautiful skies, you get to
hang out with beautiful people?
And I think that a lot of times you kind of get caught into what, you know, the media or what, you know, the sort of the general consensus is that if, for example, if you're running, then you should want to get faster. But that's not a goal for everyone. And a lot of times you might go, actually, no. Like, a lot of times that people assume when I'm writing training plans and I make them run hill sprints, which, unless you have an ankle issue, that's what I make you do. People assume that I'm doing that because I want them to get faster, but that's actually not the goal of hill sprints or speed work of any kind. The goal is that that then makes your easy runs feel easier. Now, yep. It will also improve your speed if that's something that you're interested in, but for me, the holy grail of running is actually that moment where you're running along and you're like, actually, this is easy.
And it feels good.
It feels very good.
Yeah. Look, I think my last word on the whole comparative thing would be that once you master it, once you are able to become conscious that you're doing it, either in terms of comparing yourself to yourself, to anyone else, you know, to the world in general, once you master that and manage it and turn it into a positive for yourself, it can be a really pivotal thing in terms of how you treat yourself in general. It's like the day that you realize that what other people think of you is none of your business. It's so freeing, and it's the same thing with comparison. The day you realize that you have a choice and you can choose to, you know, say that person's doing this and that's amazing and I'm doing this and that's amazing too, it's just freeing. And who doesn't want to live a free life when it comes down to it?
Yeah, and I think also once I had done a few faster things, it became more and more apparent how meaningless it was, which is sort of one of those, you know, it's a bit paradoxical that you almost have to sort of, at least for me, you know, it's not fast for a lot of people, but it was very fast for me and very fast for what I thought I was capable of. But once I got there, it was kind of like, huh, this isn't all that it's cracked up to be, and it's actually not that important, and no one else really cares.
Yep. You know, and as with everything else in the world, the great value was, of course, in the journey.
Yes, which is I think it's probably why, you know, we've had a few people talking this week about that sort of slump that you get after an event, and I certainly always get a bit of a slump, but it actually for me starts on the last, sort of the last training run before I do a race. I get into a bit of a slump then, because the sort of the training part is my favorite part, and it's sort of like that part is coming to an end, and it's always it's always good to have something else,
more things,
yeah,
going relentless on. Forward motion, always going have something on the horizon
after that. But for me, the training is the fun part, and if anything, races are a disruption to that, because there's the tapering beforehand, which I don't particularly care for, and then there's the recovery afterwards, which I don't particularly like, which is also the benefit of, like, if you're just running to run, then you can pretty much skip over, like, unless you're running a marathon or something like that, then you do need to taper, even if you're running at a sort of relaxed pace. But for most other things, you don't need to taper or really recover if you're just running to run. And I think that running for running's sake is really underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been the greatest joy for me the last few months is rediscovering just how lovely it is to go out there, to have my heart rate, you know, keeping it low and taking it easy and just enjoying every single step, even though it's getting cold here.
Well, apparently it's going to be extremely cold in Warwick, and I think that I might actually get to wear long pants for the first time in God knows how long.
Wow.
So that's a bit exciting because I have a whole, and I could even wear, you know, arm sleeves, or there might be a jumper involved. I could potentially go out to dinner on the Friday night and actually get to wear jeans.
That is exciting. Radical.
I know. It's very exciting.
Well, I hope it's an awesome event. We should probably wrap up now that we've spoken to death about comparison, I think. And do you know what? I think we've made our point fairly clearly, though, because we're pretty and this is something that comes up again and again in our community, and we will always take the same line on that you are on your own journey. We want to help you and support you in that journey. You know, just take the time to look at yourself and respect yourself and celebrate yourself. Don't worry about anyone else. They'll look after themselves too.
Yeah, they will. And I think that it is one of the great things about the community is that the community will celebrate your achievement just as much as any other achievement. There's no difference in how excited I get about somebody's PB based on how fast they are. That's a completely nonsensical thing to me. You know, a PB is a fantastic achievement no matter where you're at, and particularly now that having been running for a while, my PBs are pretty few and far between. So I get all of my vicarious PBs from in the community and training groups now.
And look, do you know what? If you are going out there and getting it done, that's worthy of celebration. And we are going to celebrate you for doing it. So go out and do it. Listen to this while you're doing it, and then jump in the community group and tell us about your run.
And if you are enjoying these podcasts, we would love for you to pop over to iTunes and give us a rating or a review, and it's the best way to get the podcast out there. So hopefully more people who also enjoy it will hear it.
Hooray!
All right, and next week we will be back, and we're going to start talking about some more practical training stuff. So next week we're going to be talking about all of the things that sort of come up at the, you know, in the beginning of training. So could be a great one if you are looking at getting back into training, or just want a refresher, or if you are thinking about starting Learn to Run with us in June.
Hooray, we'll talk to you then.
Bye.